Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, April 11th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Trinidad man flees police on tractor after threatening individuals with hatchet. Biden hosts Japanese Prime Minister. And salmon season canceled again. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. In a bizarre and dramatic turn of events on the evening of April 9th, Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies were dispatched to a residence on Berry Road in Trinidad following reports of threats against an individual. According to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, what ensued was a tense standoff with the suspect, Michael Matthew Black, who had reportedly threatened another person with a hatchet. Upon their arrival, deputies found that Black had already fled the scene. However, their investigation quickly revealed a troubling pattern of behavior. Black had allegedly made threats and displayed aggressive behavior towards others in recent weeks, prompting law enforcement to take swift action. Authorities located Black's associated truck at his residence and moved to apprehend him. But what followed was a scene straight out of a movie as Black, described as acting erratically, made a daring escape on a tractor into the wooded area behind his home. As the situation unfolded, Black reportedly refused to heed surrender commands, making suicidal statements and threatening to shoot law enforcement if they didn't vacate his property. He eventually retreated into his residence, barricading himself inside. In an effort to de-escalate the standoff, deputies maintained communication with Black. After several tense minutes, Black emerged from his home, allowing deputies to approach and ultimately arrest him without further incident. Black now faces a litany of charges, including threatened crime with intent to terrorize, brandishing a deadly weapon, elder abuse, felon in possession of a firearm, felon in possession of ammunition, obstructing, resisting a police officer, and a probation violation. He has been booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility pending further legal proceedings. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office is urging anyone with information about this incident or related criminal activity to come forward. They can be reached at 707-445-7251 or through the Sheriff's Office Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. During Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month in April, supporters of survivors are calling for more inclusive responses to this issue. Data on trans and non-binary survivors in particular is lacking. Eric Tegetoff reports.
April is Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month. Advocates for sexual assault survivors in Idaho and across the country are pushing for a more inclusive view of who is impacted by this issue. Trans, non-binary, and other gender-expansive individuals have largely been left out of data concerning sexual assault. Dr. Amanda Goodson is an assistant professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Security Studies at the University of Texas at El Paso. She says the lack of data has started to change in recent years, but trans and non-binary people face unique challenges for reporting violence.
When go to report experiencing especially sexual victimization, they have heightened barriers, or there may not be services that are available to their needs because we didn't have that or we didn't know about that experience.
Goodson says recognizing someone's identity can improve how we respond to their assault. Last week, Idaho Governor Brad Little signed a bill banning the use of public funds for gender-affirming care. Black Liberation Collective is a collection of trans youth in Idaho. Program Director Paradise Newton says the lack of inclusion of gender-expansive people is telling because data provides a moral document showing who we prioritize in our culture.
Including trans and non-binary people in our reporting about sexual assault is one of many necessary ways we can ensure that we accurately share information. But it is also one of many necessary ways we can be accountable to the survivors in our communities.
Goodson says it's important to be critical of data and understand who is included and missing. She says this will better serve people impacted by sexual assault.
Having inclusive practices and having inclusive services and data that is inclusive as a whole will give us a better idea of how we can improve our responses.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Mirroring 2008 and 2009, the commercial and recreational salmon fishery has been canceled for a second consecutive year in a row. KMed's Lauren Schmidt files this in-depth report.
Salmon remain a vital presence throughout California. Each year, they navigate the state's rivers to the Pacific Ocean, only to return years later to spawn a new generation. These fish are fundamental to religious practices, well-being, and subsistence of indigenous communities, as well as a multi-million dollar fishing industry. However, for a second year in a row, the commercial and recreational salmon season has been canceled. The announcement was made yesterday evening, Wednesday, April 10th, by the Pacific Fishery Management Council, a regulatory body that oversees the management and conservation of fish stocks on the West Coast. For more, we spoke with Steve Gonzalez with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
The Pacific Fishery Management Council is a quasi-federal agency. It is made up of officials that represent Washington, Oregon, and California, and they come together to decide limits on fisheries concerning those three states.
Every year, the Pacific Fishery Management Council meets to set regulations.
And in this case, they decided that the salmon fishery would remain closed.
Salmon populations in California continue to suffer due to prolonged drought and climate-related disruptions. Coupled with low ocean abundance forecasts and diminished returns, the Pacific Fishery Management Council has recommended a complete shutdown of California's commercial and recreational ocean salmon fisheries for the current year. According to CDFW, the 2024 stock abundance for Sacramento River Fall Chinook are estimated at just over 200,000, while the Klamath River Fall Chinook is forecast at 180,000 adults, marking a 20% increase from 2023 numbers. CDFW's director, Charlton Bonham, stated, quote, "While we have experienced consecutive wet winters recently, the salmon expected to benefit from these improved conditions are not anticipated to return to California waters until approximately 2026 or 2027, end quote. Bonham noted that salmon available for this season were significantly impacted by challenging environmental conditions that occurred 3 to 5 years ago.
You know, the numbers were 20% higher for the number of salmon counted from last year, but that was still lower than the average number that is expected. And so given those numbers, they made the decision to close the fishery.
This is the fourth instance of the fishery's closure in its history and the second consecutive.
2008 and 2009 was the last time that consecutively the fishery was closed. And it kind of mirrors the same reasons that it happened these last 2 years. And that a big cause of that is drought. So the life cycle of the salmon fish is, you know, 3 to 4 years. So if you go 3 to 4 years back from today, California was in a drought. So those same kind of conditions existed for 2008 and 2009. The good news is we did see a bounce back the following year. That's not to say it'll happen this year. We'll have to wait and see. But these last 2 years, these last two wet seasons, we're hoping in the next 3 years that we'll see a bounce back of this population and we can open the fishery. It's a hard decision, I think, to let everybody know in California, and especially those families that rely on this fishery, the local tribes, the commercial fishermen, anglers that like to go out there with their family. We understand that. We want a healthy salmon population, and we're doing everything we can to make that happen. Recently, the governor came out with a strategy for a healthy salmon population, and there were 71 ideas that we want to implement to help sustain and create a healthy habitat for salmon to exist. Some of those ideas are, you'll see, is the removal of Klamath dams, some of the dams on the Klamath River. This is going to help to open up increased wetland areas, increased cold water opportunities for salmon to spawn in, to grow and to live, and hopefully increase their numbers in the coming years.
Historically, salmon populations returning to California rivers were estimated in the millions each year. Today, those populations have drastically declined and now heavily rely on hatcheries for their survival. Numerous state, federal, and conservation management documents outline various reasons for this decline over the decades, pointing to the ways in which land and water use, infrastructure development, and now an overlay of extreme climate disruption, largely attributed to human activities, have impacted these populations. For millions of years, salmon have endured global-scale climate variabilities, surviving through their unique and diverse life history strategies. Recovery mechanisms are inherent in their DNA. However, the past decade has brought rapidly intensifying drought conditions, exacerbating the challenges for salmon, which include rising water temperatures and the federal rollback of protections under the previous administration, which allowed more water to be diverted to agricultural uses. Consequently, despite their resilient nature, salmon populations are struggling significantly.
You know, our climate's getting warmer, so this isn't going away. So we're trying to come up with strategic plans, increase a healthy habitat, increase wetlands. Altogether, these ideas and these strategies need to work together so we get to a point where we have a healthy population, where salmon do return to their birthplace in healthy numbers, and where people of California can enjoy a healthy fishery again.
The state has recently unveiled a comprehensive plan aimed at safeguarding salmon populations in response to the challenges posed by a warming climate. Titled California Salmon Strategy for a Hotter, Drier Future, the 35-page document outlines a strategic approach built around six foundational pillars: removing the barriers and modernization infrastructure for salmon migration, restoring and expanding habitat for spawning, protecting water flows and water quality in key rivers, modernizing salmon hatcheries, transforming technology and management systems for climate adaptability, and strengthening partnerships.
I think we're all optimistic. I think the growth of 20% over last year is a good sign that we're heading in the right direction. And then I think with, you know, added techniques that we're doing with thiamine treatment for the fish and for DNA tracking that we're conducting at CDFW and the removal of the dams on the Klamath River, all these coming together, I think we're headed in the right direction to get to a healthy population that can be there for California in the future.
Notably, federal funding has just been announced for the California 2023 salmon fishery disaster. Although the distribution of these funds has yet to occur, we asked about the potential for additional support in the future.
CDFW is recommending that we do offer the same help that we did last year. So I think it's important for the community fishing community, the commercial fishing community, and everybody that's connected to salmon and their health, that they get some relief.
The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is currently seeking public input on how to effectively allocate the $20,600,000 in funds provided as relief to address the impacts of the 2023 salmon fishery disaster.
Honestly, I think they could be best served if they happen quickly.
That last voice you heard was Kenny Priest.
You know, we were promised last year. I remember just during this time when they canceled salmon season, they had a press conference in San Francisco. You know, congressmen were there. All the major players were there saying, you know, we're going to get this money right away to the fishermen. It's not going to take very long. And we're going to get it to where, you know, where it needs to go. And here we are. It's April, a year later. And now, you know, they've cut the funding in half. I think it was originally 45 or over $40 million. Now they're down to 20, you know, and now they're sending out these surveys. Like, how do you want, you know, who should get the most money? You know, what do you guys think? How are we going to divide this up into tiers? So it's like, really, I mean, it should have been done already because, you know, now we're on another closure and, you know, nothing is going to happen quickly. So it's turned in kind of a farce how they're doing this. They keep promising the fishermen that we're going to take care of you. And here we are a year later, and we're just stacking up the emergency money that, you know, hopefully one day folks can see.
Priest is both a fishing guide and a local journalist based here in Northern California. He contributes guest articles to the North Coast Journal and runs his own blog, Fishing the North Coast.
I'm kind of in the political side of it too. I'm also a board member of an organization called NorCal Guides and Sportsmen's Association. So I'm learning more about the political side of salmon more than I ever wanted to know.
Priest, whose livelihood depends heavily on salmon fishing, has been closely monitoring the decisions.
Well, first off, it was at the PFMC meeting, which took place in Seattle. So it was really the California Department of Fish and Wildlife who recommended to the PFMC that there would be a closure. So it comes off kind of sounding like PFMC recommended the closure, but it was really the CDFW, the Fish and Game Commission. Those guys didn't want to have a season, and they're right. Rightfully so. I think the folks who do the numbers and look at the models, there's just not enough fish in the ocean to divide it up amongst everybody. And if we did have some kind of fishery, we'd be right back in this place next year and possibly the year after. So I think fishermen like myself, you know, a lot of the charter boat fleets, a lot of the commercial guys were just like, you know what, let's just bite the bullet one more year and we'll be in a better position next year.
When asked whether the current situation with the salmon closure feels similar to those in 2008 and 2009, he says,
it feels a little bit the same, you know, but I think this is consecutive years. And it's a little bit more scary when you start looking at the ocean abundance. There's just a lot more factors right now. You know, we went through a drought. So that's still, we're still kind of reeling from that last year of the drought. So I think, you know, a couple of wet seasons that we've had, I think we're going to be in a better position. But, you know, it's not a great situation. What's really restricting us is the main stem of the Sacramento River. So they had the worst returns, I believe, ever returning to the main stem of the Sacramento up by Coleman Fish Hatchery. There was like 6,000 fish that returned. Historically, you know, there was hundreds of thousands. So if you look at that, it's not the same as 2008 and 2009 when there was a short collapse there. This is very bad. And if we don't do the right thing like we're doing now, you know, we could be in a lot of trouble. They could list the fish, the fall run of Chinook salmon, which would really put us in a bind.
While the economic trickle-down effects of the salmon fishery closure can significantly impact local economies, Priest remains cautiously optimistic.
I think next year, I think we should be in a good spot next year. You know, that's based on just the fact that we've had a couple really good winters, right? So we've had where fish could come up, you know, not as many fish came up last year as should have been, but the fish that did come up made it to where they needed to go, spawned, and the juveniles had plenty of water to get back out to sea. So we're going to see that in, you know, 3 or 4 years, we're going to benefit from that. So how this is going to play out is, you know, I think we're going to be in a better spot in the years to come. You know, obviously we need these winners just to keep coming. And but you're right. I mean, it's devastating to some of these communities like Shelter Cove, who rely on salmon. And I, you know, even Eureka. Eureka is known as a salmon port. And there are other fisheries available. There's going to be a rockfish season this year. It's ready open. And there's the Pacific halibut fishery that's going to open on May 1st. But what happens is if you don't have salmon, they shift the effort. And they shift the effort to, you know, kind of what's left. And then those species get beat up on because there's not, you know, without the salmon, everybody's going to fish for just a couple of things. So it's, you know, it's kind of a two-edged sword there. It makes for a tough situation. But I think next year, hopefully, we're going to be out of this.
Despite the challenge posed by the closure, Priest supports the decision to shut down the salmon fishery. He recognizes that such measures are crucial for the long-term health and sustainability of salmon populations, which are vital not just to his livelihood, but to the entire ecosystem and the fishing community.
I absolutely do. You know, I've seen the numbers, what they are, and literally it's just simple math at that point. You know how many fish are out in the ocean, you start dividing them up amongst user groups, and there's just not enough to go around. So I do think this is the right decision. And I think it would have been irresponsible for CDFW to push for us to have a season. And that's really what they started to do in March, where they created these seasons. Two of the alternatives had fishing in them. And the third alternative was a closure. And I think, you know, the more people who started looking at those, including, you know, the commissioners, started to think, you know, this is headed in a wrong direction. And luckily, you know, kind of at the last minute there, the last couple of days, they thought about it and recommended a closure, which it's the right thing to do. Not everybody's going to agree with that. You know, there's a lot of folks who just want to go fishing, and, you know, they think the government is out to get them, but it is the right thing to do. You know, if you want your kids to go fishing, if you want your grandkids to go fishing, sometimes you have to sacrifice. And I think that's where we are.
You can follow Priest and his insights online by searching Fishing the North Coast. His blog offers a wealth of information for anyone interested in local fishing conditions and environmental news. Additionally, Cayman News will continue to share updates.
The commercial and recreational salmon season will open in May for Oregon anglers. Those seeking to land a Chinook this season will have to drive north. You can learn more at www.dfw.state.or.us. In national news, Biden hosts Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida for official state visit.
During a joint press conference on the White House lawn, Biden praised Kishida as a stalwart ally.
The alliance between Japan and the United States is the cornerstone of peace, security, prosperity in the Indo-Pacific and around the world. Ours is truly a global partnership. For that, Mr. Prime Minister Kishida, I thank you.
Biden made reestablishing longtime alliances a foreign policy priority upon taking office. It was part of an effort to rebuild frayed relationships resulting from former President Trump's aggressively isolationist take on foreign policy. Japan was the remaining member of the so-called Quad to be honored with a state dinner. The Quad is an alliance of the U.S., Australia, India, and Japan, seeking to counter growing Chinese assertiveness in the Pacific.
Together, our countries are taking significant steps to strengthen defense security cooperation. We're modernizing command and control structures, and we're increasing the interoperability and planning of our militaries so they can work together in a seamless and effective way. This is the most significant upgrade in our alliance since it was first established.
Prime Minister Kishida was asked about his government's efforts to open lines of communication with North Korea in an attempt to lessen tensions in the region over that country's nuclear program. He said that he and Biden are on the same page on the issue. He also said that he and Biden agree on keeping lines of communication open with Chinese leadership. However, there has been some disagreement between the allies over trade issues, particularly Japanese firm Nippon Steel's proposed buyout of U.S. Steel. Biden's Department of Justice opened an investigation into the proposed merger. Kushida said, through an interpreter, that he trusts the U.S. legal process will advance the deal.
Japanese businesses employ close to 1 million workers in the United States, and investment from Japan to the U.S. can only increase upwards in the months and years to come. And we wish to cement this win-win relationship.
Biden had argued that U.S. Steel should remain U.S.-owned and operated. The powerful United Steelworkers Union, a major ally of the Democratic Party, has voiced its disapproval of the proposed deal. Biden's response to the question was a bit more guarded, yet diplomatic.
I stand by my commitment to American workers. I'm a man of my word. I'm going to keep it. And with regard to that, I stand by our commitment to our alliance. This is exactly what we're doing, a strong alliance as well.
Kishida will remain in Washington overnight and take part in a three-party summit with Biden and Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. tomorrow to discuss Chinese naval moves in the South China Sea. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters, Max Pringle, Eric Tegetuff, and Lauren Schmidt. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@KMUD.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Musick.